Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know what time it is. It's Vancouver FM, everybody. Every Tuesday night from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Vancouver's only chiptune broadcast. And boy, have we got an episode for you, dear netizens out there in the virtual plaza. Thank you so much for joining us. Chiptune, video game music, retro hardware, electronic music history, synthesizer features, all sorts of cool stuff. However, this past weekend we did have the Vancouver Retro Gaming Expo, truly the highlight of the calendar of the retro scene here in Vancouver. A feature event that just goes and goes and goes in its, I believe, 13th year. Big shout outs to Game Deals on Columbia and New West. Brian, we love you so much for putting this on year after year and just making it better every single time. The Retro Gaming Expo happened on June 20th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. this past Saturday. And I spent the whole day talking with fans of the show. Thank you so much for those of you who came by the table. A couple of you picked up a toque. I'm wearing one right now in this 30-degree weather. Yeehaw. Although it's actually not too hot because this is a good toque. Hand-embroidered with the logo. A couple of you also spent some good time at the Free Play Arcade. Brought out the arcade stick. Also, you checked out some physical media of chiptune. Gave me some good suggestions for next year. Having some examples of how to make chiptune and how to have stuff playing chiptune. We are, of course, Vancouver's only chiptune broadcast, and the Vancouver Retro Gaming Expo is amazing. I can't say enough good things about it. Four floors of retro gaming wonder at the Anvil Center in New Westminster. Of course, the vendor and artist alley on the first floor with tons of retro games available, as well as amazing art, and we'll be talking about some of those artists and vendors. On the third floor, we had the Canadian Video Game Museum, several independent game developers, the Vancouver table, of course, the Gaming Free Play, and the Main Stage Theater, featuring chiptune showcases, costume contests, several artists including Missing No, The Wavebirds, Danimal Cannon, Danny B Style, Final Fantasy Improv. Up on the fourth floor, they have the panel rooms, lots of really, really cool stuff. Spicy Gamers, FIFA, EA Sports and Game Developments with Bogdan Beneshevitz, Victor Lucas, JJ McCullough from the Electric Playground, I believe that's correct. Retro Games that entered the political zeitgeist. Hilltop presents translation patch ROM hacking. Eat the Video Game. The Fictionals with 16-bit improv comedy. Tetris Talks. All Nintendo Trivia. Game Trivia. The Video Game Music Challenge. And There Is No Easy Mode with Trivia. Tournaments that were featured included Street Fighter 2, Super Mario Strikers, Tetris, Mario Kart Double Dash, Mortal Kombat 2, FIFA World Cup 2022, and Smash Melee, provided by Phantom Alley Gaming. We love them. We love them. And of course, high atop it all, the Chilliwack Retro Computing Club. Honestly, that's got to be up there for one of my... I mean, I love all the stuff, but the Retro Computing Club is honestly one of the coolest things. If you like hardware, you could even see a mainframe computer. All the old Apple, IBM, NEC, PC-98 stuff, Radio Shack. Oh, goodness, goodness, goodness. Lots of goodness for you. So I have a 47-minute segment of interviews. We had six interviews, including with Roman, our Russian friend, talking about who also talked about Tetris, as well as building his own chiptune tracker for the to emulate the ZX Spectrum. We also spoke with... I'm just going to pull up this folder here, and then I can... There we go. Oh, not there... there we go. There's my Verge tray. We have the Canadian Video Game Museum, which is a brand new exhibition-style museum and focused on preservation and 3D modeling of old consoles and really starting up the Canadian video game historical preservation. Brand new Atari 7800 game. Oh, yeah. From Kinetiscape, two local animators. together to bring back Atari 7800 goodness, running on an actual Atari 7800. Astrolander, a new game by teenage developer Max, Grafar Games out of Winnipeg with Paul, and the Chilliwack Retro Computing Club. Oh my goodness, it's so good stuff, isn't it? Yes, 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 yes. Tons of amazing vendors as well, too. Let's see. Video Games Unlimited, AR Toys and Collectibles, Sasquatch Comic Company, The Kooky Cavern, Red Eye Games, Chico Games, Next Wave Games, LVO Braga, Unvaulted Games, Saved Games, Nimbasa Entertainment, Alexander, Press Start Video Games, 626 Toys and Collectibles, What's Up Towns, Video 20XDX, It's Worth It, Morgan's Pillows, P&J Games, Stephen Wilson, Galaxy 23 Collectibles, Everything J&J, Cubicle Games, JNC Retro, Mod Vintage Collectibles, Game Deals, Liquidation Sale, Redcap.Games, Games R Us, Game Hut Surrey, Neopia Central, Hang and Play Video Games, Steve's Things, Video Games, yeah, we already did that. Carlos Creations Vancouver, my favorite place to get retro game and pixel art inspired Perler art. Oh yeah, there was a huge, like 2 meter long Final Fantasy sword. It was incredible, absolutely incredible. Some of the artists. Sam Kalensky, what's up, my boy? Chili Ultra, Maniegi, Radical Imp, Pindy Gamer, Archangel Wolf, Kintsugi Tattoos, Luster Studios, Galaxy Gaming, Robin T, Toasty Prince, L, and O. Let's see, I have the bag here. Let's read it. Odara. Yeah, I believe that's what that one is. Fantastic stuff. We'll talk about some of my hauls there. It's just cool. If you ever wanted to go see retro hardware being played live, if you want to hear some live chiptune, if you want to come and talk to me about this program that's been on air for coming up on 9 years in the fall, I've been doing the Retro Gaming Expo since 2018. So we've been a regular figure there for several years now. And of course, it's just a lot of fun. I like it. I would recommend you to do that. Of course, come back next year. It's usually on the third weekend in June this year because of the sports ball thing that's going on. It was soccer themed, so very cool. There was even a shout out to Queen of Shadows cosplay, who cosplayed as Lara Croft, but in an England football jersey. So boom, boom, boom. Awesome. And let me just go to my messages. Again, shout out Video 20XEX, Queen of Shadows, Drunk Off Heart Condition, Bonus Stage Van, The Wavebirds, Missing No, Jewel Maiden, thank you so much for leaving a sticker on the table. I'm sorry I didn't get to see you. Shout out to Michael Wong as well, too. The Anvil Center, all sorts of cool stuff. The Wavebirds, boom, boom, boom. Danimal Cannon, Danny B. Schnoodlebug, of course, who provides our amazing theme music here. We heard him. We're just playing a little bit of background music. Schnoodlebug will be playing a little bit later in the month, if I recall correctly, on the 28th, I think. And we'll talk about that at the news at the top of the hour. Who else? Nibs Cosplay also picked up a toque. Thank you so much. A couple people also picked up a toque. And this event, of course, would not be possible without the incredible hard work of the folks at Game Deals. Shout out, Brian. You really, honestly, I don't know how you do it, man. Thousands of people come through every year, and it just gets better and better. We love you. All right, so we'll let this track play for a little bit, and then we're going to play the complete set of interviews. I did had a chance to do 6 interviews on the scene. We first talked with Roman, who is Russian, and talked about Tetris in one of the panels, as well as he showed me some examples of a chiptune tracker emulating the ZX Spectrum. We then spoke with the Canadian Video Game Museum, which is located here in Vancouver. and how they're getting off the ground and really preserving history and making it interactive as well. They're even making some of their exhibitions into a game, which honestly, I think is wonderful. After that, we'll hear from Kinetiscape, which is the brand new Atari 7800 game. Two guys behind it who are local animators here in town. A brand new game from teenage developer Max, Astrolander, classic platforming, but with brand new shiny graphics. Grafar Games with Paul from Winnipeg. And of course, the Chilliwack Retro Computing Club. Amazing. It's so good. If you don't, you gotta go. Of course, for more information about the Vancouver Retro Gaming Expo, you can check out their social medias. They're pretty much at Van Retro Gaming on almost everything. Their website, VancouverGamingExpo.com. And you can also join their Discord server. I'm in that server. Come say hi. And I hope a couple of you who are in that server are tuning in tonight. And for all of you fans, all of you wonderful people out there in the virtual plaza, we remind you to stay connected, netizens, and synthesize with nostalgia. But without further ado, let's make our way over to the second computer for these interviews.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Vancouver Retro Gaming Expo. This is Bitcouver FM. We are on scene all day here on the third floor, and my first interview is with Roman, and we just had a blast reconnecting about the ZX Spectrum. So please, for Radioland, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I found out you're a chiptune artist as well too, so I have to talk to you.
Yes, so my name is Roman, and also on the demo scene and in the music scene, I am also known as Megas. So I'm making chiptune music from 1994, I believe, so this is when I started. So I started on ZX Spectrum because I'm Russian, so kind of ZX Spectrum was very big in Russia, and that was not those were not original ZX Spectrums, but were Soviet clones. When Soviet engineers managed to kind of replicate all the custom-built chips using basic components, yeah. So obviously, I actually never had an original British ZX Spectrum, so only Russian and Soviet clones. Yeah, so I was making music quite a lot in the late 90s and early 2000s. Then I had like actually a very, very long break with chiptune music and in music in general, but then kind of sometime later, a few years ago, I finally resurrected my love to chiptune. Kind of, it actually never left my life, it just I was not making this kind of music. So I started making chiptune music again, and so because right now at home I don't have that much time to make music on a computer, I got introduced to this portable trackers such as LSDJ,
yep.
Dirty Wave M8 tracker.
Oh, amazing.
So I have Dirty Wave M8,
yep.
And so when I wrote the whole album on M8, I realized, okay, so I want to make chiptune music, a ZX Spectrum, chiptune music for ZX Spectrum in the same way, so I started making my own tracker.
Yes.
So it's an LSDJ style tracker for handheld consoles such as like this Linux-based simulation consoles like Unburnicker G35X Extreme UI Brick and like many, many others.
Wonderful.
Yes. So that's an LSDJ style tracker. So currently it supports those chips that were used in ZX Spectrums, this AY38910 and YM2149F.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm planning to add more chips there. So I'm going to add this Yamaha FM chips,
yes,
that you know from Sega Genesis and... Oh. Also from old PC days like Adlib, Sound Blaster 16.
Legendary 24-bit sound.
Yes, and of course, then I will add Sid from Commodore 64 as well. Yeah, so this is these are my current plans. So the tracker is called Chip Nomad, and kind of, is it okay if I advertise the website?
100%, please.
Okay, so it's chipnomad.org. So go to that website, try this tracker if you like chiptune music.
Amazing. Definitely a big shout out to Trash 80, who made the M8.
We're
friends with him. He's fantastic. He's done some shows here. Of course, LSDJ is a legend in our scene.
Yes.
Nano Loop was kind of the GBA, but it's nice to hear that we've... Because there are some things that are desired in the tracker that LSDJ and Nano Loop don't do. And the M8 is amazing because you can load your own sounds and have your own sound fonts and everything, but there's just nothing like doing it on the actual chip itself.
Yeah. So, and that was actually my goal as well when I started making Chip Nomad. I wanted the music to be like true chiptune that you can actually play on this retro hardware, on ZX Spectrum, Atari ST, and all the other platforms.
Amazing. Once again, where can people find it?
So it's chipnomad.org.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you so much, Roman. Really
Thank
pleasure
you.
To meet you. Yeah. As we say in Russian, очень приятно.
Yeah. Спасибо.
And we're back. We're well underway here at the Retro Gaming Expo. This is Vancouver FM. I have a very special guest from the Canadian Video Game Museum. If you want to introduce yourself for Radioland.
Yes. Hi. My name is Ryan Dunnison. I'm the founder of the Canadian Video Game Museum. We're kind of trying to incubate right now a concept of a physical video game museum for Canada. We don't have one. We're one of the top 10 countries in game development by most metrics, and we are one of the only countries in that whole list that doesn't have anything to represent that. So we're trying to set up something here in the city. And we're starting with a bunch of interactive little exhibits that we've created ourselves. I come from a game design background, so we're trying to make sure that we can gamify the process of like education in the industry. And right now we're showing a little bit of a pop-up here at the Retro Game Expo, and we will be at the end of July trying to open up a small exhibit at the Museum of Vancouver as a proof of concept.
Fantastic. Big shout out to the Museum of Vancouver. We love the crab sculpture and the planetarium. You mentioned that you're trying to engage the content in a game style itself to further the idea that like the process of learning can be a game as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So my background is a game designer, but I've also started teaching in the game and education side of things as well. So I've been an educator at the Art Institute of Vancouver, LaSalle, and now the Center for Digital Media. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a lot of different things over the years in terms of other industries and how they've tried to educate using their own mediums. Like with film, you have documentaries. Games, we don't really have that right now. Well, there's a few bits and pieces that are starting to show up. But so we're looking at like the global landscape right now of like both what's happening in museums generally. So you're seeing these interactive exhibits like Meow Wolf and things like that. And we're also seeing that like we have this really cool medium that we can really use to teach things. And we're not seeing a lot of that happening yet. So we're hoping to kickstart a little bit of that stuff going on.
Amazing. Games as education. As someone who's been doing the show for a while, I've seen the chiptune scene and the video game scene through many years here in Vancouver. We have a lot of companies that do game development here, a couple of kind of landmark ones, as well as a ton of indie game developers. Yeah. Where do you see the important part of archiving?
Oh, that's an interesting question. So, yeah, our industry is notorious at not keeping its history around because of many reasons. A lot of it comes down to acquisitions happening, and then people just don't care about the stuff that happened before, and so a lot of it gets lost. Also, like, a lot of developers hold on to their own stuff, and then it just doesn't get transferred. There's just not a good process for that. So we do see that there's a lot of these other organizations right now that are attempting to, like, work directly with those companies to do that. We're looking at it from a little bit of a different angle at the moment because we can see that that process isn't underway. So what we're trying to do now is, like, digitally archive physical objects and things like that. So we've done a lot of 3D scans of old consoles and things to hopefully be able to recreate those in the future with permissions. But, it's a huge part of the problem. But not the only one. There's a lot of different things going on. Yeah.
I was talking with someone about soundtracks and how that a lot of games that we want to see a remaster or a remake of because of the rights. And it's the same thing with physical objects as well, too, because they own, you know, the schematics and the copyright to the hardware itself.
And sometimes that's split across many different companies. So what you don't necessarily always get to see is that when a company goes under or, like, a company gets acquired, sometimes its IPs get split. So you get things like Coleco, right? So Coleco's brand as a brand is now belonging to like one company, but the patents for like what the consoles looked like or the games or whatever could belong to like several different groups of people. So if you're trying to then get all that stuff together so that you can do a recreation of that, or a soundtrack is the same kind of problem where you have the artists and then you have the publishers and then you have the game publishers and all that kind of stuff. Getting all those people in the same room and agreeing, that becomes a really big challenge. So you even see that with like the recent Tony Hawk's games, right?
Absolutely.
Where they have a few of those soundtrack pieces in there, but not the full set. And so then it becomes a question of like, did they just not try because it was just seemingly too hard, which is a possibility. But a lot of the time it's also like whoever that holder of that is at this time might have changed hands also, and then it's like, okay, but this person's less willing to work with us, how do we it's a challenge.
Jet Set Radio Future is the standout example for me of there's a reason why they made Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, and they brought Hideki Naganuma back to write new music because they wanted that sound, but they couldn't get the rights to the Jet Set Radio Future stuff.
100%.
And then Sega itself is notorious for making something cool and then not caring about it.
Yeah, and it's not always not necessarily not caring about it. Like, as, with the Japanese companies in particular, I worked at one for a few years. Sometimes the rights are even split up within the company itself. Mm. So, like, I worked at Bandai Namco, and, like, they have a CEO of Pac-Man who owns basically the rights to the Pac-Man IP. So, like, if you wanted to do something with Pac-Man, it wasn't just as easy as, like, oh, we're just going to use Pac-Man because it's part of our company. You still had have to go through a process. So it's possible that that's a scenario that, that happened. It's possible that it isn't, but, like, there's a lot more things that people don't necessarily see behind the scenes that make some of these even harder to deal with in the long run.
The role of a museum and an archive these days, I find, is dual. It's both digital and physical. And the digital being like those scans that you mentioned, emulations of old games that are hard to find or out of that. Can you speak a little bit to the physical part of your collection and how that can grow over time?
Yeah, so where I started, I started from a research aspect. So I was working on teaching game history courses at the Art Institute at the time, later in LaSalle. And basically I was like, okay, I want some things physically to represent some of the things I was teaching. So I started with research and then looking at companies, but then I was like, okay, well, but like if I'm teaching an era, it would be nice to like bring in a console to show them what that would look like physically. So I started picking up game consoles here and there, and so now I have a collection of over 50 game consoles from all over the spectrum, which is hopefully going to be transitioned over to the museum once we have a physical space. Because it takes up a lot of space in my house. I think that the physicality of the medium is something that is missing from a lot of things today.
Agreed.
And it's something that, like, people get really attached to the physical part. When you ask somebody, like, what do you remember about, like, the games from your past? A lot of people remember, like, playing with a specific console. Like, the games, they remember, and they like them, but, like, it's to get that feeling back, it's really about, like, holding that controller and stuff like that. So we're looking at that. We're trying to find ways to kind of bring that back. It's obviously a bit of a challenge, especially when you have consoles from like the 70s. That plastic gets brittle over time.
Absolutely. And good old Bakelite.
Exactly. And so you can't just have people like handling these things freely anymore. Like some museums are trying to do that, but you have to be pretty careful with it. And like there is a limited supply to some degree. Now, some were mass quantities, whatever. But even so, so we're trying to find ways that we can kind of... We've been taking really high-quality scans to use in our digital components, but we want to eventually turn that back towards physical so that we can have physical reconstructions that are like one-to-one with the original so that we can give people a hands-on experience with it, because it's so important to like... You don't really get a sense of how that thing really played at the time without giving somebody that controller, especially today where you get a lot of like emulation, but the emulation usually is running still on like an Xbox controller or something like that. You're not really seeing what that thing felt like at the time. And so that's, I think, a big piece that's missing. And when you look at, especially in the emulation scene, something that we looked at early on, there's no controllers from like the second, like what Wikipedia currently calls the second generation, which I also disagree with the classification. There's a lot of like other generations really that happened. But anyways, long story short, in that era from the Atari 2600 and Fairchild Channel F kind of all the way up through to the end of the ColecoVision.
Yep.
We have like several different types of controllers that showed up. The early ones that are like the Atari.
Yeah.
Some of those still exist. We still have like a joystick, right? Yeah. But when you get towards that, like we have dial pads and things added into the controllers, you cannot find like a USB version of that today.
No.
So if you're trying to replicate that experience, it's really hard. Like I've tried a couple of different things, and I'm like now considering we just build our own for display purposes and stuff like that. But like it's a really huge challenge right now.
It brings in 3D printing and soldering and adapters and dongles. Yeah,
exactly.
It's good times.
They're all skill sets that like I have a small amount of, but it's one of those things that like we're currently not funded, so we're still like trying to build that up. Over time, I'd love to get an engineer to like just be in house so we can do a lot more of that stuff. But it's
For people who want to support the project and find out where you are, where can people find you on the internet and in person?
Yeah, so we have a domain cvgm.ca, which stands for Canadian Video Game Museum.ca. We will be doing that Museum of Vancouver installation for a few months from like 2 weeks from now for a few months. And then hopefully we will create a physical space from that. We also are active relatively on Instagram as well with, I think it's under at CVGM or at Canadian Video Game Museum, one of the two. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But yeah, that's how you can reach me for now.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Let's keep on preserving history.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, everybody, welcome back to the Vancouver Retro Gaming Expo. We're on the third floor with some of my table mates, the neighbors here just outside the theater. They have a new Atari 7800 games. And for Radioland, can you introduce yourself and what you've done behind the project and the name of the project, please?
Hey, I'm Brent Bouchard. I'm the one of the designers and the programmers, I guess, for the new game called Kinetoscape for the 7800. I'm programming it in Atari 7800 Basic, and we got a little bit of a demo here at the show. I'll toss it over to Tom here for the rest.
Hey there, I'm Tommy McKenna. I'm co-founder of Zapped Interactive with Brent Bouchard, and we, as mentioned, are working on Kinetoscape, a Metroidvania-style game for the 7800. My position on the game has been as kind of gameplay developer. Like I've created the map of the game and some of the interactions.
And sprite designer. And level designer.
Yeah. And many beers for many game dev conversations.
As all good game dev goes. The 7800, I feel, doesn't get enough love that it deserves. A lot of people know of the other classic consoles, the 2600 and so on, but the 7800, again, a massive advancement in technology. What are some of the advancements you found? Because we talked briefly about how some of the early development was modeled after older Atari consoles, but now you've changed scope to the 7800.
Yeah, because for me, the 7800 was the system I had growing up. I had a lot of 2600 games, 7800 games. All my friends had the Nintendo, of course, but I was stuck with my 7800 games, but I fell in love with the system. Later in life, I learned that it actually had more processing power than I realized. So we wanted to kind of push those limits and try to make something, you know, with multiple levels and an ending and maybe an intro and sound. You know, bar was kind of low, but that was what we were shooting for, and that's what we're striving with this game anyway.
Can you speak to the either advancements or limitations of the 7800 for things like level design and memory storage?
Yeah. So when we first set out, Brent had did some look, you know, design sort of research, and we saw that games were able to do a lot of progressive things, like having a game system where you're moving from one room to another, finding things, and then going back. And, you know, much like a Metroid game, but in a very simplistic way. So when we started rolling it out, it seemed like we were going to be able to do a bunch of stuff. And so initially we pumped out a map of the game that was in excess of 260 or 70 rooms, separate rooms. And as we moved through and figured out some of the limitations of memory and how that was going to constrict us, we ended up knocking the game down to 106 separate unique screens with different assets involved. And so it was a huge balancing act between how many characters you could have on screen at the ratio that we chose to go with, which we have fairly large characters as opposed to a lot of Atari games. We are working on most of our characters around 32 pixels tall, which is pretty huge.
Yeah.
Double most games. So that constricted us a fair bit in terms of what we could have on screen and how many screens we could have in progression.
For the actual, because you do have a physical cartridge here, could you speak a little bit to that manufacturing process? Because it's not like that console is readily available, or the hardware to actually make those stuff is readily available.
Yeah, so we programmed it within the parameters that it was able to fit on a cartridge. That was our plan from the get-go. We just wanted to get this thing on a cart. I suppose we could have possibly programmed it larger only to fit on a ROM, but we wanted to make sure it was made for a cart. And then we were in talks with a developer who was able to take what we did, the data file, and they know someone somewhere who was able to make a cartridge, you know. So they helped us do that. That was outside of our scope, but the point is we programmed it to fit on the cart, and it did fit on the cart so far, this demo we have, so we're happy about that anyway.
So good. For some of the, like, is this your first project on the Atari 7800 and the first project for the company?
This is our first ever video game. This is Brent's first endeavor into coding of any sort. Mm. And it was my first game development situation. So, yeah, a lot of lot of hallmarks for us here.
Amazing. I also see a lot of wonderful like prints and merch and T-shirts. I really like that black, the blue and white one a lot. I'm